afternoon. It is 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1st of June. We're headed towards summer. It's Drive-Thru HR, Mike Vandervoort hosting today, and starting a very busy week. I'm getting ready to go on vacation, so today's cleanup day, and I'm doing a show with a guest from an organization that I work with. Fiona Jameson is our guest today. She's with Spring International. Good afternoon, Fiona. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Michael. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Fiona, would you please, for our listeners who have probably are not familiar with you, would you please tell us about yourself and about Spring and what you do?
Yes, absolutely. I'd love to. So I am currently the president of Spring International. We're a boutique HR and research consulting firm. We're based in Philadelphia. I've been with Spring for about 10 years. We spend our time helping Fortune 500 companies gather and act on employee feedback. So that means a lot of engagement surveys, motivating employees, building leadership effectiveness, and doing a lot of analytics for those clients.
Okay, you're a PhD, correct? So you have a pretty analytical background.
That's right. Back in the UK, where I got my doctorate, I worked for a management research center. Worked on a variety of HR projects, mostly focusing around organizational downsizing and survivor management. So, in fact, my doctorate was on the impact of downsizing on survivors, so those people left behind after major reductions in force. And my time there was spent learning how organizations can manage change effectively while minimizing the impact, the negative impact on both the business and on employees. Today, though, you know, I focus much more on helping companies to maintain and create exceptional employee experiences rather than that downside of downsizing. So it's quite a switch from being in the UK, where it was the more negative end, to working with growth companies over here in the US.
Yeah, and if you don't mind a personal question, because it always fascinates me, and actually I know a little bit of the backstory, but for listeners, you moved across the sea, so to speak, and across the pond, I guess, is the expression. When did you move to the U.S. and what are the differences between HR? Just real quick, between HR in the U.K. and U.S.
There's a lot of similarities. I moved here back in 2000. I was working in downsizing there, and there was a struggling economy, a lot of privatization going on, a lot of downsizing, restructuring. And when I moved here to the U.S., I was working much more on the growth side with companies who were building, acquiring organizations, and sort of focusing much more on employee engagement. And I think there's, between the U.K. and the U.S., the UK is, one or two years behind in terms of a lot of HR initiatives, whether it be, succession planning or employee engagement programs. There's sort of a bit of a lag. A lot of the lessons that, I certainly learned when I came to the US were probably a year or two ahead of where the UK is. So I think in terms of their general approaches to HR, very similar. They're much more open to unions and works councils, obviously, in Europe than they are here in the U.S. So there are some sort of philosophical differences. And, of course, in the U.S. there's a lot more focus on, benefits, coming
right.
from the U.K., where a lot of that's taken care of, is very different.
And, of course, the U.K. has more employment contracts for individuals than the U.S. and all that sort of thing. And that's not what the purpose of this discussion is, but it's always mm-hmm. interesting when we have someone else on and you have those different experiences. So you and I met through the organization that I run, which is Q Inc., and and he is a participating member in our consultants group and has been for a long time, which we greatly appreciate. And so when we just had our conference in Louisville, you and I were able to spend some time to getting to know each other, and I thought it would be interesting to get you on and introduce you to this sort of the guests of this show, which are largely in the HR community online and social media. You're not a heavy social media practitioner, I think. I know you're on LinkedIn, but you don't use Twitter and stuff like that too often, correct?
No,
yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah, so it's not like a membership requirement in the club or whatever, but a lot of times we ask people to tell where they could be found. So if somebody wanted to connect with Spring, before we get into our questions, would it be best to find you on LinkedIn or contact Spring directly, website?
Yeah, we have, we have a website, www.springitl.com. That'll get you to all of our services. You can also check us out on LinkedIn. Again, the same, search for Spring International and we'll come up. We also have a Facebook site, which will give you more of an insight into the culture of Spring and our employees and the kinds of work that we do, sort of above and beyond our day-to-day work in terms of our community involvement.
So how would you describe the culture at Spring? You guys you said boutique, which often equates with small, but so how big is Spring and what is the culture?
So we are a small company. We have 15 employees. We're mostly statisticians, senior consultants, analysts, and, you know, we come from a variety of backgrounds, mostly HR, politics, communications, all skill sets that really help us with the kinds of analysis that we're doing for our clients. We're mostly all senior in the sense that we've been in the field, you know, 10 or more years. And really, we often work as sort of an ad hoc analytical group for many of our clients, companies that don't necessarily have a human capital analytics team in-house or strategic sort of HR folks. They'll come to Spring, and we almost work like an ad hoc department doing additional work for them.
And I got the impression from our conversations or cocktails that you guys have both a pretty high-level work ethic and manage to generate a lot of fun in your office and virtual work environments as well.
We do. So we're, you know, a very sort of laid back environment. You know, we get sort of open plan office, if you can imagine that. We just had our every Monday we have staff lunches where we buy lunch for every employee and we sit around and we generate new ideas. We do a lot of brown bag lunches where we all, you know, teach one another. We consider ourselves sort of an organization of learning. So anytime any one of us reads something new or interesting in the industry trends, we share them among the group. So, you know, our goal a lot of the times is to bring best practices and ideas to our clients. And I think that's one way of having it. You know, I've got 15 people out there looking for new information all the time, and that's what we're doing, sharing in-house. Plus, we spend a lot of time outside of work, you know, doing fun things at conferences, and we have a community garden, and so.
The small business environment offers a lot of cool opportunities. I think that's why a lot of people are attracted to startups and stuff. So I sent you, you know, we have some kind of high level questions that are designed to, you know, open up conversation. So the first question that I told you I was going to ask you when we did our little contact was in the work that you do with these companies trying to help Fortune 500 companies build better workplaces and positive employee relations atmosphere, what is it that keeps you and or your clients up at night?
I think there's two things. I think the first one is around how to move the needle. Many of the companies that we work with have been focused on engagement for a couple of years. They've built solid engagement feedback programs. You know, they're getting lots of information. They've made some significant advances in terms of their corporate HR strategy. But a lot of them are still struggling with building the skills of their frontline managers. You know, and ultimately, I believe these are the people that are responsible for motivating the workforce. They're the ones that are out there trying to create a positive day-to-day experience for their employees. But for some of these larger organizations, building that consistency around basic people skills seems to be an ongoing challenge. And it's most often this group of managers that are causing the biggest problems in an organization. It's those simple things of dealing with, like, poor performers, favoritism, poor communication skills. That's what's generating a lot of the disengagement among employees. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that a lot of these companies have really got a handle on you know, how to build those frontline leadership skills.
So how do you assist them with? I mean, I know not personally, but Spring. How do you guys assist in that role?
Well, I think one of the first things that we do, and you know, we do this through a lot of the employee feedback that we gather, is help them identify where some of their weaknesses are. So, you know, when you've got 5,000, 10,000 frontline managers in some of these large organizations, you know, where do you go first? Who are your weakest managers? So the kinds of survey work that we do identifying effective leaders and ineffective leaders helps them to first not only target the skills that they need to be working on, but also figure out where they are, you know, what district, what region, you know, what level. So a lot of the analysis that we can do helps to identify where those weaknesses are and what the weaknesses are.
Okay. You said there were two buckets. Did you touch on, or two,
yeah,
two things? What's the second?
So the second is around, I guess I'd call it cultural consistency. Again, for the last few years, we've been working with a number of organizations that are growing very rapidly. And I think that, you know, they may start off with a very strong culture that draws a lot of people to that organization. But how do they maintain that culture as they grow? You know, how do they build, you know, double the twice the number of sites? How do they acquire a new part of the business without losing what makes them great? And how do they, if they're doing it through acquisition, how do they integrate a new culture without losing what's important to them out of their core culture? And again, I think this comes down to being deliberate about capturing what employees value most about the organization and then ensuring leaders are consistent in what they communicate and how they demonstrate those values on an everyday basis. But I see a lot of companies sort of culture getting watered down as they grow, and I think it's an ongoing challenge for them.
So we had Dave Ulrich on the show a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. which was interesting. Because that, I'll tell you, that guy is smart, but that guy can talk. So I did get a chance to ask him a question, which was, what is culture? I'm not going to ask you that question. But in how do you guys feel, or how do you feel in a define engagement? What do you look for? What are the hallmarks of engagement as you work with your clients?
Well, you know, I think every company that you'll talk to will have a slightly different definition of engagement. But, you know, when we're helping our clients to measure it, we're looking at this sort of overall organizational outcome measure of pride, commitment to the organization, you know, willingness to say great things about the company to others, and, you know, intent to stay, and then that element of discretionary effort, willingness to go above and beyond for the company. And it's really, you know, one of the things people say, well, you know, engagement's really important, but I think what's more important is what are they engaged in? You know, engagement is irrelevant unless they're actually engaged in your business strategy. So it's also that alignment with the business strategy. You can have some very positive and enthusiastic employees, but if they're all enthusiastic about something that's irrelevant to your business strategy, it's not going to help you drive performance and company success. So that's how we define it, and I think, you know, that's how we build it into any surveys or work that we do, is trying to capture, you know, what does that look like in your organization and how do you get there?
What are, and I know I'm asking some ancillary questions here, but what are some of the challenges, like, when you take on a new client and they're, you know, most companies that you would assume, especially Fortune 500s, would already have some sort of a survey process in place, and yet that's probably not universal, right? So what are the challenges as you try to work with a client or pick up their business? How do you guys address that?
Well, I think the first thing we do is take a look at what they're doing. I mean, I'm not a fan of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I want to make sure that, you know, you're leveraging any work that's been done to this point. I think the challenge that a lot of companies face is that they don't really have, they may have done a survey, right, and they've gotten all this data, and then they sort of sit and look at it and go, now what? And I think that's what a lot of our clients, when they come to us, they're like, well, we got this report, and we're at a 55. Right? And they say, what do we do with a 55? And I think that's where they struggle, is converting, you know, that number into something that's actionable at every level of the organization. What does that really mean? You know, and how do you act on it? So, you know, if they've already done some kind of a survey, that's where we would start working with them. We'd say, okay, well, let's really take that number apart. Let's look at what you're doing well, what you're not doing well, who's responsible for this, what kind of behaviors do we need to be moving towards, what do we need to put in place in order to make those behaviors happen. So it's like activating engagement. So I think that's often where we start. And then, you know, we do occasionally get the odd client who says, we've never done it before.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we start? And I think that's where there's the best opportunity to really start with a program that's simple and straightforward, but gets them the answers they need in order to figure out what is their culture look like, what is their level of engagement, and where can they improve, and where can they reconnect with employees on a personal level.
Okay. Are there some quick, like, for people thinking about their survey process, are there some quick mm-hmm. practices that you might focus on or mention?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that what I've just mentioned is keeping it simple. I think, you know, surveys don't need to be complex. I think you need to, you know, have some core questions around employee engagement and making sure you always have an opportunity to ask an open-ended question. I truly believe that employees are our best resource. You know, they probably have ideas and suggestions for your organization that you may never have thought of, but have you ever given them a voice and enabled them to share those ideas? So anytime that you can leverage that employee voice and get some open-ended comments in your survey is always a good thing. I also think that one of the biggest mistakes that I see companies making is not sharing back the results and not having a feedback loop. There is no point in asking employees questions unless you're actually going to say, yes, I heard you, and here's what we're going to do about it. If you're not actually going to act on the survey, don't even bother doing one. You know, there's nothing more frustrating to an employee to be asked their opinion and then for that information to just die on a shelf somewhere. Because guess what? Next time you ask that person a question, they're going to say, why bother? So, you know, we often say it's spring. There's no such thing as lack of survey fatigue, or there's no such thing as survey fatigue. It's lack of action fatigue. People get fed up with nothing happening.
Right. So, yeah, you can ask people what they think all day long, but if you don't care or report back, then you lose. And that seems like it's not exactly rocket science, and yet it gets
exactly
all the time, doesn't it?
You'd be surprised how many times, you know, we come to a company and they say, well, we never really did anything with it. You know, did you tell every employee that you heard their voice? Well, we sent out a memo. Well, you know, we all know what happens with emails, right? We all assume that somebody reads it, somebody understands it, and they communicate it. The chances are they may have read it, they probably didn't understand it, and they certainly didn't share it. So, you know, it takes just those very simple steps, you know, making sure that it's simple, employee voice is captured, and communicating back the results and making sure that you make a commitment to doing something, as simple as that sounds, does make a difference.
I think that another thing there that, you know, you kind of touched on it, just grazed it, but you didn't really mention it, is you can't just rely on one communication method either. I mean, you can't just send a memo, and you can't just talk. I mean, you kind of have to have a strategy of communication that gives people different opportunities to consume that information in different ways. I mean, I think as a best practice, you know, email, posters, visual, online, all that kind of stuff is probably, it's difficult and time-consuming perhaps, but I think it, I think you have to kind of offer it to people in a way that they want to consume it. So anyway,
absolutely.
Let me just do a quick reset. Fiona, our guest today is Fiona Jameson. Fiona is, and you said president, right? Your title?
Correct.
President of Spring International?
That's correct.
Okay, great. President of Spring International. Spring is a company that works with Fortune 500 companies in building positive employee workplaces, focusing on survey process and employee engagement practices. And we're talking that kind of stuff this afternoon. So, Fiona, the second question that we usually ask is the kind of the opposite of what keeps your clients up at night, and that's, What is top of mind? I kind of view that as, you know, what are the opportunities that you see out there right now? So what's top of mind for you and your clients these days?
I think one of the key things is around big data and big data analytics. I think that, you know, a lot of companies are doing it now. They have access to masses of data. They don't necessarily know what to do with it or how to leverage it or connect it all together. And I see a lot of, you know, startups in this space. I know we've been doing analytics in this realm for about 10 years. I think that I think there's a huge opportunity to learn even more. Start connecting employee engagement data with your financial performance data, your operational data, looking at customer data, looking at your bottom line numbers, seeing how this all interrelates and what drives what and how you can leverage it. But I think that, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I think there's some implications out there that companies will start relying on the data too much without thinking through the full implications. One example, I think you and I probably talked about it before, Michael, was sort of RFID tracking of employees and machine learning, you know, being able to pretty much tell a lot about your employees. And then we start to walk along that very fine line, right, between how much data is too much data and what are the unintended consequences of making decisions based on some of this data. So I think that's one of the newest areas. It's fascinating to me. It's fascinating to our clients, and I think we're really going to be focused in on that in the next year.
I'm really not the world's greatest data person. I'm fascinated by technology. I'm fascinated by the way information can be used. You know, it's so powerful. But when it comes to crunching the numbers, I took math and my brain glazes over and I just can't seem to get rid of that. But are there places, so like, and you work with HR people and you probably work more with corporate than you do with practitioners. And a lot of our listeners are people in the plants, in the practitioners in the field. Are there places or resources that you would suggest that people who are interested, I mean, there's tons of information online, but I guess what I'm asking about is where would somebody go that just wants to understand the basics of some of the stuff that you're talking about and build their information as a routine HR user? Got any thoughts on that?
That's a great question. I mean, there's certainly a number of books out there. There's one called Data Smart. I don't, off the top of my head, I don't remember the author. Predictive Analytics is another book that's out there. I think there's a number of good, solid books out there, and I can certainly share some information with you, after the call. But I think that, organizations like ourselves at Spring, we're in these kinds of conferences where we're learning this. We were just at the Human Analytics conference at the Wharton University, which is a great, I think these are sort of the universities that are doing that kind of work often have forums and things, and we attend a lot of these and gather information to share back with our clients. So, another group we belong to is the Philadelphia Society for People and Strategy, and that's a group that has their own Human Capital Analytics Forum. Again, we're going to be attending that in a few weeks, and I think, that's where the conversations are happening and where a lot of that debate is going on about what's next in data analytics.
Yeah, and from the other, from this, it's not really the social media side, but I mean from the internet, and these are not necessarily big data specifically, but there are a lot of great resources, including one of my co-host colleagues on this show, whose name is William Tincup. William and a guy named John Sumser run a company called Key Interval, and they do a lot of analytic. They're analysts related to the human capital industry and software. But there are a lot of resources online and a lot of forums as well, blogs and other things. But I was wondering from your perspective, as a practitioner. So those are some great resources. With big data, I know that where I worked before I joined Q, we used stuff, and it was amazing the things that you could turn up. And there are lots of companies out there that have created many kinds of profiles that you can overlay data sets against raw data and generate profiles, and I can't think of the name of it, but it was a consumer shopping profile, and basically by knowing what zip code you live in and a few other things, they can almost predict exactly what you would buy in a in a basket of food or be most likely to spend money on. So I mean the possibilities are almost unlimited, I think, with this stuff, but as you said, it can get quickly out of hand and go kind of down a it either becomes a very time-consuming process, or it might flip over to the dark side if you start making. If you know too much, you make decisions based only on information. So you've got. I guess what I'm trying to get to is how do you use numbers but keep the people perspective in focus? How do you guys help your clients do that? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we do is when we help them build data sets around their engagement data, their labor data, cost of turnover, one, we always keep it anonymous. We always keep it confidential and anonymous. We do it out, within the firewall. We make sure that only those people doing the analysis have access to the data, so that even when we're identifying, potential issues or risks, it's kept at that confidential level. So that's one thing, and I think that's absolutely key in doing this kind of work. I do think as well it's around making sure you're asking the right questions. A lot of companies say, well, we've got all this data. Let's go dig. Well, the question is, what are you trying to find out? What are you trying to prove? What question or problem are you trying to solve? And start there, and work your way backwards. So one of the key projects that we often do is looking at, what's the cost of risk, employee relations risk, what's the cost of turnover and, you know, how does engagement relate to that? So, you know, if we increase our engagement by 1 or 2 points, what's that going to do to our bottom line? You know, how is that going to impact the cost of absenteeism and turnover? You know, if we, you know, look at how the sales ratio and the staffing within a retail store is related to engagement, customer satisfaction, and profitability, what's the tipping point or staffing ratio that we should have in this store, right, where we get the most out of engagement without impacting or negatively impacting customer service? So it's those kinds of questions where you go in with a very specific purpose in mind of what's the best level of engagement and customer service for the best profitability that will get you the kinds of analytics you need. And I think there's a lot of, you know, work that can be done in that realm.
Right. And I guess the other thing is just as kind of a, this is probably a little bit of a segue question. As you do surveys, are there like, I every organization is different, every culture is different, every style of it. You know, there's probably, like you said, a million definitions of engagement. But are there like some milestones in the surveys? Like, if you, you know, since you work with all these different clients, do you look for certain levels of performance that you consider benchmarks or KPIs, or, you know, is there sort of a model people should be looking at to aspire to?
We do. I mean, we have, you know, core engagement benchmarks. We have benchmarks around, you know, basic pay and benefits. We have some benchmarks around, you know, the sort of leadership effectiveness, what constitutes a great leader, what constitutes a poor leader. So we're able to provide, you know, guardrails of, you know, how well they're doing. We also believe, though, that the best benchmark is against yourself. Because even if you're doing better than the best benchmark, are you going to stop trying to be better? Are you going to stop trying to improve? The answer is no. You always want to be better than where you are today. So even some of the best organizations that we work with are really right up there on that Fortune, you know, best places to work list. They're still striving to be better. And I think, you know, they ignore benchmarks to some extent. But there's definitely some key things that need to be in place. We almost, in our actual engagement model, we have what we consider the basics, which are, you know, those things like work rules and policies and procedures and diversity and inclusion and, you know, having the right tools and resources to do your job and, you know, having job satisfaction. And then we have what we consider the differentiators. And those are the things like leadership and culture and employee value proposition and career opportunity and growth. Those are the things that are going to differentiate an organization from being just good to being, you know, a fantastic place to work.
Yeah, and it's, as you said, it you can be, you know the stuff that I've done in the past in terms of labor relations, right? I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and even some of the best companies in the world from time to time get you know, issues where part of their organization, whether it's due to a supervisory problem or just a, you know, kind of a loss of focus, goes sideways. And so, you know, this is something that every organization really needs to be focused on kind of all the time, I think. And I guess we're down to the last 90 seconds. So, Fiona, I guess what I would ask is, do you have any closing thoughts? And just repeat one more time where people can find you for us before we wrap up, okay?
Sure. You can find Spring at www.springitl.com. You know, feel free to email us through the website if you're interested in any kind of employee feedback programs, whether it's surveys or focus groups or site visits or analytics. We love to do analytics, and we're passionate about growing, you know, organizations that are doing, you know, really focused on employee engagement and creating best places to work. You know, I want everybody to kind of enjoy their job as much as I enjoy mine. So I think, you know, if you've got an organization who really wants to focus in on this and become a great place to work, then we might be someone to help you do it.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being a guest on Drive Through HR. You're actually the fourth person from Q that we've managed to have on. So you're in a handful. And it was great to have a chance to connect with you today, and thanks so much for being our guest. I'm going to play a little music.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael.